An Evin prison in Tehran, which is one of the worst prisons in the world.
At the ministerial, Vice President Pence emphasized that the United States will continue to call out the persecution of religious minorities in Iran, and he had a message for the long-suffering Iranian people. Even as we stand strong against the leaders in Tehran, know that we are with you, and we urge you to press on with courage in the cause of freedom.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
This is VOA News. I'm Tommy McNeil. While the country he ruled for 30 years plans its future without him, former Sudanese President Omar al-Bashir is fending off charges of illegally possessing foreign currency and receiving gifts in an illegal manner. 4 months after he was ousted by the military, Bashir began a series of courtroom proceedings. According to a detective who addressed the court, Bashir told investigators he had received millions of dollars in cash from Saudi Arabia. Many Khartoum residents said that they were disenchanted with the trial, saying that it was too little too late. The International Criminal Court has charged the former president with war crimes, crimes against humanity, and genocide for his actions during the long-running war in Sudan's Darfur region. An Iranian oil tanker seized in Gibraltar for violating European Union sanctions sailed toward Greece Monday after repeated U.S. requests to detain the ship were rejected. Marine traffic monitoring data indicated Monday the tanker, with its name change, was making its way to the port in Greece, on track to arrive next Sunday. The officials have not publicly confirmed its destination. Iran warned the U.S. that any action to seize the ship, filled with 2.1 million barrels of light crude oil worth $130 million, would result in heavy consequences. U.S. President Trump said Sunday, "The economy is doing very well," and dismissed any concerns of a recession.
"Honestly, I'm prepared for everything. I don't think we're having a recession. We're doing tremendously well. Our consumers are rich. I gave a tremendous tax cut, and they're loaded up with money."
The president offered an optimistic outlook after last week's steep drop in the financial markets. Many analysts have said that they are concerned about a possible recession. More at voanews.com. This is VOA News. The U.S. military has just tested a ground-based cruise missile with a range that would have been banned a mere 3 weeks ago. VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Babb explains.
The Pentagon says the missile was launched from an island off California's coast and hit its target after more than 500 kilometers of flight. That distance is important. The United States previously could not pursue ground-based missiles with a range between 500 and 5,500 kilometers. They were locked in the INF, the Intermediate Range Nuclear Forces Treaty, a decades-old arms control pact with Russia. VOA previously reported that Washington withdrew from that pact on August 2nd, citing years of Russian violations. The Pentagon stressed that this cruise missile was not configured to carry a nuclear weapon, but rather a conventional payload. Carla Babb, VOA News, The Pentagon.
New figures from the Census Bureau show that immigrants who were naturalized had a higher rate of full-time employment than people born in the U.S., and that citizenship can help migrants close the income gap. AP correspondent Jackie Quinn.
Naturalized immigrants had a full-time employment rate of 83% last year. That compares to 81% for non-citizens and a lower 77% for native citizens. Although for some migrants, work is a requirement for their visas. Median income for naturalized immigrants was just over $50,000, slightly lower than $51,000 for the native-born, but well beyond $36,000 for non-citizens. The 2018 Current Population Survey also finds those who became citizens had a higher rate of advanced education degrees than even U.S.-born residents. I'm Jackie Quinn.
The New York Police Police Department has fired a white police officer who used a fatal chokehold during the 2014 arrest of a black man in a case that fueled nationwide protest. Eric Garner's dying words, "I can't breathe," became a rallying cry for the demonstrators and sparked a national debate over race and the use of force by police, helping to ignite the Black Lives Matter movement. New York Police Commissioner James O'Neill told reporters Monday that the police officer, Daniel Pantaleo, had been dismissed from the force over Garner's death. He said the firing was based on recent recommendations of a department disciplinary judge. Afghanistan's president marked the nation's centennial independence day by vowing to eliminate all safe havens of Islamic State after a bombing at a location the Islamic State terror group's Afghan branch claimed responsibility. I'm Tommy McNeil, VOA News.
Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Botti in Washington. Today is Tuesday, August 20th, and here are some of the stories we are covering. Sudanese President Omar al-Bashir appeared in court Monday for the first day of his corruption trial.
Bashir said that he received donation from the Crown Prince, which amounts to about $25 million. He used some money in payment of public institutions facing critical situation in payment.
Ahmed Ibrahim Al-Tahir is the head of former President Bashir's defense team. Former Malawi President Bakili Muluzi wants another meeting with protesters, but they may not be interested. Zimbabwe's government explains why it banned MDC protests in Bulawayo. People in Western Rwanda say they are being prevented from crossing into DRC. And a Ugandan government official says people she calls mafia want to kill her.
The mafias, the cabal, the cartel that is used to intimidating, robbing this country, they're yet again plotting to kill me. They've been having meetings.
For the first time, Kenya will include intersex people in this year's census. And we'll talk about police brutality and reform in the Gambia. Those stories and more are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Sudanese President Omar al-Bashir appeared in court Monday for the first day of his corruption trial. He faces charges of illegally receiving gifts and possessing foreign currency. Ahmed Ibrahim al-Tahir, the head of Mr. Bashir's defense, says evidence presented so far against the former leader is weak. He says he is confident the team will put up a strong defense of the former president, whom he described as a nationalist and an honest person. Al-Tahir tells viewers Peter Clotier that the Sudanese judiciary has demonstrated independence over the years.
Bashir said that he received a donation from the Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, which amounts to about $25 million. Of course, this money comes in cash because there is a problem of transfer between Sudan and other banks outside Sudan, according to the American sanctions on Sudan. So they brought this money for his person. And he used this money, of course, not for his personal interest, but because the country is facing this problem. He used some money in payment of public institutions facing critical situation in payment through foreign currency from Bank of Sudan for that reason, as I said. For example, he gave three hospitals money to finance equipment for those soldiers in Khartoum, Madani, Shendi, and other places.
What has been the former president's reaction to this corruption trial?
He's now just a citizen in Sudan, facing accusation, and I think he's very calm, he's very confident, he's sure that he's very innocent, and nothing, not even a penny, went to his pocket of his family or his friends from this money. All this money have been used in public interest.
You say this trial has no political background. What does that mean?
Well, I don't think the trial in the court, of course, it does not have any political background. But outside, of course, There is very huge media stereotype against the president, which has been waged for a long time, accusing him and his regime of financial corruption. This campaign continued for months in social media, making false stories of money transferred abroad, dollars deposited in foreign countries like Malaysia and London and so on. But actually, after he had been detained for more than 4 months with other leaders, now this is the only accusation against him. There is nothing else than this. So all this media has a political background to political associate the president and his regime.
Ahmed Ibrahim Al-Tahir is the head of former Sudanese President Omar al-Bashir's defense team. He spoke with viewers Peter Clotty from the capital Khartoum. Former Malawi President Bakili Muluzi has again asked for a meeting with the Malawi Human Rights Defenders Coalition. The group has been leading protests demanding the resignation of Elections Commission Chairperson Jean Ansah for presiding over the disputed May 21, 2019 general election. The former president's invitation comes as the protesters say they plan to shut down Malawi's main airports and borders on August 26 to drive home their demand. Mr. Muluzi first asked the protesters in July to postpone their protest while the courts hear a petition against the conduct of the May 21st election, but that request was rejected. Timothy Mtambo is the chair of the Human Rights Defenders Coalition.
To begin with, I'd like to confirm that we have received a letter from the former president, Dr. Bakiri Muluzi, requesting to meet us. And we met him last month where we're discussing the current standoff in the country. He promised us that he'll meet President Tarika, which he did. So why we have a problem with meeting the former president this time around, we have a problem to meet him because he has not given the feedback to the nation as to what transpired when he had a meeting with President Mutharika. It has taken over a month. He has been quiet. We believe in a dialogue that has got a direction, and the dialogue that we see is taking us somewhere. Secondly, we are planning to say we are going to meet him on the condition that President Mutharika, the appointing authority of Jean Ansah, should be on the round table. Jean Ansah herself should be on the round table. And Bakiri Muluzi should be there and us, because we need to be talking to the people. Citizens have been so clear to say they have lost trust in Jean Ansah. Section 12 of Malawi Constitution empowers us as citizens to say if we have no trust in our leaders, then we can call them to resign, because our agenda is basically to chart a new beginning for Malawi.
Timothy, you know, the former president, he says he wants to find a peaceful, lasting solution that will keep Malawi together. This is coming ahead of your planned demonstration at the airport, where you say you want to shut the airport down. Do you understand what the former president is trying to do to defuse everything?
Let me say this. What will stop this is for Jean Ansah to resign, or Mutharika to force Jean Ansah to resign. What Malawians are communicating now is that the power in a democracy belongs to the people. And these are the people that put these people in public offices. And when they mess up, people should have the powers to demand accountability from them.
Timothy Mtambo is the chair of the Human Rights Defenders Coalition of Malawi. You're speaking with me from the capital, Lilongwe. A senior Ugandan government official says she has received death threats from fellow members of the government. Evelyn Anite, Uganda's Minister of Privatization and Investment, says people she calls mafias in the government want to kill her for trying to save the government peristarto. Mugumi Davis Rakarinji reports from Kampala.
Minister Evelyn Anite called journalists Monday to tell them she has received phone calls threatening to kill or harm her. She says the alleged plotters want her to stop involving herself in matters related to Uganda Telecommunications Limited, locally known as UTL.
The mafias, the cabal, the cartel that is used to intimidating, robbing this country, they're yet again plotting a move to kill me. They've been having meetings in various offices, in Kampala Club, in the offices of Uganda Registration Service Bureau, and they've recruited a group of young people, and they're tapping my phone all the time, They're trailing me. I have already alerted the police.
A mafia is a type of organized crime syndicate whose primary activities are protection, brokering and enforcing illegal agreements and illicit transactions. UTL has been having issues of financial management and solvency, prompting Minister Anite to ask the court to grant an investigation. She says the mafias want to benefit from the company at the expense of the government.
I want to tell you that if I die, do not look, do not even ask that there must be a postmortem done, because you already know the killers. And they must not even institute any police investigation to know the killers of Anite, because they already know.
Crispe Kaheru, the coordinator of the NGO Citizens Coalition for Electoral Democracy in Uganda, says Anite should tell the nation who the mafias are, since she is part of the government.
It doesn't add value to just keep saying that there is mafias in government without naming them. So for me, principally, let the minister name the mafias, so that can be the beginning point of a conversation around what actions can be taken against these mafias that have actually been talked about for a very long time now.
However, Bet Aol Ochan, the head of opposition in parliament, says Anita's claims must be taken more seriously.
She has already brought up the issue in the open. Let them investigate and find out the people, because she cannot give up and then stay where. Let it be handled now to the dot by the people concerned.
Fred Enanga, police spokesperson, was not available to comment on this story. Both government and opposition politicians have claimed there are some elements in the government regarded as mafias. For VOA News, I am Mugume, Davis Rwakarinji, Kampala, Uganda.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Tuesday, August 20th. Daybreak Africa time is now 16 minutes past the hour. Zimbabwe's foreign minister is calling for patience as the government implements strategic measures to jumpstart the economy and create jobs for the youth. Sibusiso Moyo also says the recently organized demonstration by leaders of the opposition movement for Democratic Change Alliance, MDCA, was illegal and an affront to the rule of law. He denies reports that the government is against protests, saying the administration wants the law respected to ensure peace and stability. Foreign Minister Moyo tells viewers Peter Clotty the leadership of the MDCA should be held accountable for organizing what he calls an illegal demonstration.
Protesting or demonstrating is a fundamental right which is enshrined in our constitution. But you demonstrate within the confines of doing so without infringing on other people's rights. So what then happened in this case was that they applied to demonstrate. And their intention of demonstrating, as stated to the civil authority, was primarily to cause a change in some level of government status, which basically can only be done through the process of an election process. But that as it may, it was their right. But the civil authority, realizing in its own wisdom that this was not appropriate and the intention of the convener was not sincere and genuine, and it was going to particularly become violent, because there had been a lot of insinuations and campaigns of violence before the demonstration.
Now, Dr. Moyo, yes. I'm not cutting you short, but there are suggestions that the government will usually wait till the last minute to go to court to try to prevent the opposition or dissenters from embarking on a strike or protest or demonstration, and that this government was well aware of the scheduled demonstration. They had time. Why wait till the last minute? And they suggest that this is a tactic the government used to undermine their freedom of speech and assembly as guaranteed under the Constitution. What's your response to that?
Oh, not at all. First of all, this Second Republic's objectives, in fact, and not only subjectives, but it has walked the talk by providing and guaranteeing the freedoms which are enshrined in the Constitution. There's never any other time when this country has had so much freedom, freedom to participate in political activities, freedom to demonstrate, freedom to do anything of association. And it was not the government which went to court. It was the civil authority which discussed the matter with the conveners of the demonstration. And they said, no, we cannot allow this demonstration to continue because you have been hyping for violence.
Sibu Sesomoyo is Zimbabwe's foreign minister. He spoke with viewers Peter Clotty from the capital, Harare. Rwandans in the Western province say they are being prevented from crossing into the Democratic Republic of Congo. This claim comes a week after Democratic Republic of Congo imposed a $20 visa charge on Rwandans seeking to enter the DRC for petty jobs and a $300 for professionals and big business people. Eugene Uwimana has more from Ruzi, Rwanda.
We are at the Rusizi border crossing into the southern Kivu province of DR Congo. Here, Rwandans who wanted to cross are divided into small groups. The conversation is similar. Why are they not allowed to cross?
We have
brought all documents expecting to cross, but arriving on the side of DRC, they deny us entrance, regardless of the documents we have, that we work in their country. They took our separacy, saying that the problems are coming from our country. The move by the Congolese authorities have paralyzed lives for families who depend on these Rwandans for their daily bread from Congo. This has affected their families. They eat because they go to DRC. They are starving. It is a very big problem. VOA tried to ask the mayor of Bukavu in DR Congo to explain why they are preventing Rwandans from entering their country, but he was not available for comment. But the mayor of Rusizi district in Rwanda told VOA that the DRC decision came as a surprise to. He says what they did is to report to central government. Kayumba Ephraim is the mayor. He says, I talked with the mayor of Bukavu, but he didn't explain to me what is the reason behind. But it is not in his competence to impose such directive. While this is happening in the southwest of Rwanda, residents in the northwest are also being charged much more to enter the DRC. It is not clear whether these directives are the result of the fear of Ebola. However, the World Health Organization has condemned such practice because it hampers the free movement of people. Dr. Kasonde Mulenga Mwinga is the country director.
WHO encourages that there is flow to the member country to be able to address the response that is needed in the country.
The Rwandan government's position remains still unchanged. Avoid unnecessary travels to DRC. DR Congo is recovering from a devastating Ebola epidemic, which has killed more than 1,800 people and is a few kilometers from Rwanda. Eugene Uwimana for VOA News, Rusizi, Rwanda.
For the first time, Kenya will include intersex persons in its national census, which will be conducted from August 24th to the 25th. This year, the census questionnaire will include three markers, male, female, and intersex. As Maureen Ojiambo reports from Nairobi, the decision follows a successful petition by intersex people who are fighting for legal recognition.
The Kenya National Bureau of Statistics will for the first time ever enumerate intersex persons in the national census that is set to kick off between 24th and 31st of this month. Speaking yesterday, Monday, Vivian Nyarunda from the Kenya National Bureau of Statistics said that the numerators have been trained and will be able to bring out the exact statistics, especially on intersex persons.
The numerators have been trained and we have the option in the questionnaire, and therefore they should be able to bring out those individuals who are intersex, because it will be very important. This is going to be the beginning, because once we have undertaken the census, then now future surveys will be able to sample based on where these people are, how many they are, so that we're able to get a representative sample to be able to do.
Intersex people in Kenya are currently estimated at 700,000 persons. As questions arise, if whether intersex people will be open enough to give more details for fear of stigmatization. The Kenya National Commission of Human Rights Commissioner Jedida Warihu said that recognition of intersex persons will help the government have factual data while planning for health, education, and even in the employment sector.
This will be the first time
in this republic and also in the world, where a nation is going to the census, having organized itself, incorporated in the enumeration tools, and trained its enumerators to count intersex persons.
As per the Kenya National Bureau of Statistics, the census will focus on 8 key issues: housing, population characteristics, education, labor force, disability, information communication technology, livestock, agriculture, and amenities. Member of Parliament Millie Odhiambo, however, says, let not the inclusion of intersex persons come as a humiliation to the affected people.
I want to thank the government for taking that bold step. And I'm saying that because a lot of people confuse intersex with what we also call the third gender. And the third gender has a lot of other issues.
Ms. Nyarunda from the Kenya National Bureau of Statistics, however, says the same characteristics on the questionnaire will apply for both male and female and intersex persons.
One of the new things that we have in the census is the fact that now, finally, we'll be able to identify how many, we'll be able to collect the numbers of the population that are intersex. And based on the analysis that will be carried out, we'll be able to have the other characteristics, their education levels, their labor force, where do they work, where do they live.
Previously, the Kenya Statistics Body only listed people as either male or female. The new marker was, however, introduced in December last year after prolonged consultations. Reporting for VOA's Daybreak Africa, I am Maureen Ojembo in Nairobi, Kenya.
After last month's protest against alleged police brutality, 12 people were arrested over the weekend in the Gambia for involvement in protests that were sparked after a market vendor died shortly after he was released from police custody. Aisha Dabo, founder member of Activist, spoke to Ricky Stryak about the need for police reform in the Gambia.
I will always remind, but to bring back something into context, that we are in a transition. And the police should, the security forces in general, should know that it's no longer business as usual, because citizens are more and more aware of their rights. So they should change the way they control the crowds, because one of the protests that happened in July, actually, the police were shooting some tear gas, but they were also using rubber bullets. So it shows that they haven't made that switch, you know, that this is a different stepping. We are no longer in the Jammeh era, where the police brutality will go undenounced and no one would say anything. This is a different era. I think, first of all, the police should integrate that into their minds, and they should be trained on crowd control, because it is citizens' right to express peacefully their frustration over an issue, especially when it has to do with recurrent police brutality.
Has there been an investigation opened into the death of the market vendor Usman Darbo, who was killed while in police custody?
Well, we heard that that investigation is happening. So I am personally, I'm not aware of any independent body. I'm not like saying that they should create a commission to investigate the death, but I think there should be an independent body who would really investigate impartially, so that everyone will be clear on what happened. What he said is that the person who died actually was an asthma patient. So that might have contributed with possible alleged actually brutality that happened during the period of detention. So all of those things. So people need, actually there needs to be an independent investigation, because I don't think any other branch can just come and investigate where that the independency or of that organization within the security forces is not determined.
That was Aisha Dabo, founder member of Africtivists. She was speaking to Ricky Stryak from Dakar, Senegal. Briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. Former Sudanese President Omar al-Bashir appeared in court on Monday for the first day of his corruption trial. He faces charges of illegally receiving gifts and possessing foreign currency. And former Malawi President Bakili Mulusi has again asked for a meeting with the Malawian Human Rights Defenders Coalition. The group has been leading protests demanding the resignation of Elections Commission Chair Jean Ansah. That's it for this Tuesday, August 20th edition of Daybreak Africa. I'm James Botte in Washington, wishing you in Africa a very good day.
Hello, thank you for listening to Border Crossings with Larry London. This month, Border Crossings is giving away a really cool Voice of America t-shirt. Hooray! If you want to win one of these awesome shirts, all you have to do is make a song request for our show. I see it, I like it, I want it, I got it, yeah. Tune into Border Crossings at 1500 Universal Time.